From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of May, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, will join us to discuss some work that he and Daryl Good and Todd Hubbs have done on soybean yield. You know very well, if you're a farmer, that they have been really good in the United States. They wondered why that was the case and went looking for some reasons. They found some interesting things. We'll hear all about that. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible right here in Champaign on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. Just take a look at the marketplace. Hey, thanks for being with us, Michael. I want to start not with what happened in Chicago, but with the agreement that the Trump administration has announced with the Chinese. There were hints at it, I think, for the last couple of weeks. Certainly, the Secretary of Agriculture was talking a lot about opening the beef market back up, and it's been closed, since 2003, I think, into the Chinese marketplace. And agriculture played a big role in this particular trade deal. What'd you think of it?
I think you're right by starting off the show this way, Todd, because I think it was every bit as important as the USDA supply-demand report on several different levels. And you hit the one on the Washington level. I think it really helps alleviate fears, trade protectionist fears in the markets, in the commodity markets especially. And I think it also shows the commodity market that the new administration is listening and does have a hand in agriculture as far as a priority. And I think that was a question mark before this was announced. And to say that something's coming and to actually see something done and to see the Chinese really rev up the news about it as much as the United States is in their own media today, I think says a lot, and it's a lot of good things. And I think you saw some manifestation of a sigh of relief, so to speak, in the markets. You saw the dollar weaken substantially today. You're down now to the lower part of the trading week as we close out the dollar for the week. And even more important to me, because of the relationship between crude oil and the wheat and how strong a tie they have right now, is we actually are going to see the crude oil in West Texas Intermediate close higher on the week. And I think in part due to this relaxation, essentially, I think takes away the fears, or at least some fears, of what NAFTA and the possibility of terminating NAFTA could present to the commodity market. And I think it's a big reason why the managed money funds have stayed so short for so long in these feed grain markets especially.
So I think it appears that Texas may be the big winner out of this with natural gas. And I think they have a new port there, right?
Yes.
And beef both being exports. I don't know whether that will come out of that area or exactly or not. But certainly anything in the beef market would help Texas because they have such a large system for production of beef. And after several years of drought, they probably need something to push some beef cattle back into those areas as well. So there are some real wins here for parts of the United States.
There are, and I think one of the things that we may want to look at next week is how the August live cattle are trading, because the reaction by the live cattle markets and the way the August, especially in deferred contracts, were able to come back up, especially given their discount to the June contract, I think you probably put a low in the August contract in fat cattle. Not willing to go there yet for the feeder market, because the feeder market in August is actually the exact opposite as the soon to go off the board May. It's got a huge premium, in my opinion, compared to the May. But fat cattle, I think you've got a real nice support now fundamentally underneath you because of exactly what you're talking about. The other big winner here is China, in my opinion. I did a lot of talking during the winter seminars and webinars about their new Silk Road project, and we're going to talk a lot more about that, I think, as time goes on, because they have a big summit on Sunday, and we were not coming. United States, Japan, South Korea were not coming, and the South China Morning Post reported today after this agreement, this 100-day trading deal plan between us and China, that we were coming, that the Japanese were coming, and that the South Koreans were coming, and they're going to sit down at this summit. And I think this, what they call the New Silk Road, their OBOR initiative, gives it a lot of credibility, because the top three economies of the world, other than Germany and China, are going to, you know, and I think Germany's going to be there, but the three big ones weren't going to be there, and now they are. I think this means a lot to China, because they really need to have this new Silk Road succeed for them to see their way through their middle income trap and their slowdown economically.
I know you've been paying a bit of attention to what has been coming from our programs here at Illinois Public Media and some of the other farm broadcasters. We were many of us in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to take the day off Monday from work, but I have to put a program together. Ray Starling talked to us while we were in D.C. He sits right in the White House and is in meetings in the morning. He's a special assistant to Donald Trump, representing agriculture. So Sonny Perdue is there as the Secretary of Agriculture. Ray Starling is in the White House, and we'll hear most of what he has to say on Monday. So those folks that are interested should make sure to tune in. No update of the markets on Monday, but some really good information from the person who has a direct line right there at the White House and an office in the White House. Now, turn your attention, Michael, to what happened in Chicago otherwise for the corn and soybeans, and how it all works into the USDA reports for you this week.
Yeah, the paradigm shift in supply, I think, is taking hold in Chicago now, Todd. I think we saw that at the end of this week. Beginning of the week, beans were stronger, corn was being sold. Typical pre-report buy beans, sell corn mindset by the funds. USDA came out with a much more attractive world corn ending stocks number, and a much bigger than expected 90 million ton soybean ending stocks number. We also had some private estimates come out from the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange. They took their corn estimate down a million tons versus USDA's fresh number, pushed up their bean expectations by 500,000 ton versus USDA. So at the end of the week, we actually saw the new crop beans fall to the new crop corn, and we went from a 2.52 ratio down to a 2.47. So the idea, I think, is taking hold, especially given the weather and potential for more rains in the middle of the week on both weather models, that beans are looking more and more sloppy. They're looking more and more like the biggest negative feature to the trade. And I think this starts to bring about some unwinding of the big short corn positions. And I say this after sending a very big monthly chart out to the clients this afternoon, a very strong pennant wedge formation in the corn. Looks like it's pretty imminent that that's going to break. Hopefully we break higher with wheat supporting and beans following along. So that's kind of how the weekly report, or the monthly report, finished the week out. And I think it did a good job. It kept the rain in on corn for the most part because of the big burdensome wheat stock still. But I think beans came out probably the biggest price negative loser when it was all said and done.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks as always for having me, sir.
You betcha. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Visit us online at willag.org. Up next, we'll talk with Scott Irwin. He and a couple of others have penned an article about the increasing soybean yields in the United States, looking for a reason. Okay, so farmers are really quite aware that soybean yields in the United States and other places across the planet have really jumped. You wondered, along with Daryl Good and Todd Hubbs, whether there was a reason that we could point to that suggested that there was a new move in the trend yield for soybeans. What did you do?
Well, we first started with U.S. average soybean yields and said, what's the best way to model the trend now? For years and years and years, we just used a straight line to project yields, and a lot of people still do that, and that may be adequate for lots of purposes. But with the really high yields in recent years, that yield has basically turned the trend line up, and we fit it with something that's called a nonlinear or quadratic function. So it just means that the rate of growth in trend soybean yields is increasing at an increasing rate. And that's what the data show in recent years because of these really high yields.
Is it genetics?
Well, that's what everyone, with probably good reason, defaults towards. Must be better seeds. And we can't say that that's not contributing because we haven't formally investigated with the data that would allow us to say, no, it didn't happen. But we took a different tack and said, okay, is something else going on? And we actually kind of stumbled into it in recent months and just doing a deep dive into the data when we saw that, gee, yields in the Southeast don't look like yields here in the middle of the Corn Belt.
Why is that the case? I mean, you would think that they would. What happened there?
Well, first off, it's really dramatic when you look in the data, and you can show that outside of the Southeast and Nebraska, interestingly, we don't know why Nebraska is an outlier, but in particular in the Southeast, the quadratic trend that we estimate in the Southeast is enough to explain that upward curve for the whole United States. Everything else, like you look at Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, kind of the heart of the Corn Belt, still soybean yields, despite the high yields of recent years, are still best fit with a linear trend. And the rate of growth hasn't changed yet. Maybe we're on the verge of it, but it's not in the data yet, even despite these big yields.
And it's not irrigated versus non-irrigated?
Well, we kind of thought that with our initial take of our analysis, but that turns out not to be the case, because what we found was that irrigated and non-irrigated production in the Southeast and Nebraska are kind of growing in that non-linear fashion in parallel. So it's not really something that's unique to irrigated production. And so that's kind of a mystery. We know where the increasing at an increasing rate for soybean yields is coming from, mainly the Southeast, with some contribution from Nebraska. And so if it was a new seeds, new genetics issue, then you would expect everywhere to be growing at that increasing at an increasing rate nonlinearity. But we don't see that. Most states are still plugging and chugging along with a straight line linear trend growth for soybeans. But the South, since about 2000, has just taken off. The charts are just dramatic. But the way to think about it is, if you go back 15 or 20 years ago in the Southeast, principally like in the Delta, you're looking at Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, it wasn't uncommon for statewide yields down there to kind of fluctuate between 25 and 35 bushels an acre.
So I guess the bottom line then is production has changed some. They're catching up. Do you expect them just to catch up and then for things to level out? And do they produce enough really to make a national impact on the national yield levels?
Right. Their acreage in recent years in the Southeast and Nebraska represents kind of fluctuate between 15 and 20% of acreage. So it's plenty to affect the national average yields. But I wanted to add on the southeastern yields, you know, something in the 25 to 35 bushels an acre area for yields. In recent years, it's been 45 to 50 bushels.
So they're just getting better at doing the job.
And very dramatically and quickly. And we don't have a formal analysis, Todd, to explain what went on, but we've attempted to dig into it. And it basically appears to us that what's happened in the Southeast is that they've tried to raise soybeans like we do here in Illinois. That's fundamentally what they've done. And they've done it with two main changes in their production practices. They plant much earlier than they used to, 3 to 4 weeks, so that they avoid the really hot, dry periods that they get in the Southeast in mid-July and later, as much as possible for reproduction. And they've switched to shorter maturing varieties. So where they would have been group fours and fives, now they're growing groups threes and fours. And my simple-minded take on it, not being an agronomist, is that they said, let's take the part of our growing season that most resembles the temperate period in the heart of the Corn Belt, and let's grow our soybeans then. If that's correct, they basically are beginning to catch up with the Midwest.
It's a model for climate change over the coming century.
You know, I hadn't thought of that context, but you're absolutely right. You know, to me, as a side note, I always hold in wonder farmers' adaptability and flexibility and their ability to innovate and, try to do things better from a production standpoint. It really is an amazing story here in the U.S. And this is just one that I find really fascinating.
Thanks so much.
Always my pleasure.
Scott Irwin, an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You can read the work that he and Todd Hubbs and Daryl Good published on the Farm Doc Daily website. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. It's the 12th day of May, hoping that you're in the field. And if you're not now, I'll bet Eric Snodgrass from AgriQuil is going to tell us that you might be in the next couple of days. Eric, thanks for being with us. What do you see in the near term?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the weather's going to be perfect for the next several days if you're in central Illinois and nearby states. Basically, we've had a pretty big shift in the overall flow of the atmosphere. You know, last time we talked and in some of our weather updates, we've been talking about this big pattern shift coming. Now, we have this thing called the negative North Atlantic Oscillation. That's a big blocking high pressure center over Greenland. That makes the eastern half of the country cool, which is what we're coming out of. But that pattern's breaking down and a new pattern's establishing itself such that there's a deep trough over the western United States and a ridge over the central United States and Midwest. So what that means is, we've dried out. We're going to keep drying out. It's going to warm up. We'll see 70s today in central Illinois. But we'll be pushing into the 80s over the weekend, maybe the mid-80s by Monday or Tuesday. That's what happens when you get a trough out west and a ridge in the central part of the country. It'll be dry as well. A lot of field work will be getting done because of that drier weather. Now, what I'm watching, though, with that trough out west is two disturbances coming through in the next week. The first one's going to come through on Monday night through about Wednesday morning. We have what's called a short wave in the flow of the atmosphere. There's a little kind of wiggle in the overall flow of the jet stream. And that short wave is going to be kicking off some showers and storms for the northern plains, like the Dakotas, Minnesota, maybe even some in Wisconsin. Now, they need this. While we've been getting all of this rain in the southern half of the Corn Belt, the northern half has been pretty dry. In fact, I had a phone call the other day with a guy in South Dakota near Pierre. He's saying, why are all the precipitation events missing us? Well, here you go. It's coming your way. Now, the second disturbance is the one I'm watching a little more closely. This is the one that's going to be about a week from now. So when we're talking a week from now, we'll be really hitting on this system. We have another big shortwave coming through that trough, and this one might kick off a bigger precipitation event in the central plains, and that'll move on up to the east. There'll be a severe weather threat with that. But more importantly, we could be seeing a lot of rain building up in Oklahoma and parts of Missouri, where we just had some massive flooding. Now, the timing, the exact location of that big precipitation, it's too far out to really pin that down, but that's what I'm watching in the next week or so.
And then if you could update us on spring progress and maybe look into the summer months too?
Yeah, let's do that. So we've been kind of watching the planting progress, and that May 15th planting progress report, which is the one coming out next week, is kind of crucial estimate that the USDA will use and kind of understanding what they expect the overall corn crop to look like for 2017. First step in that, at least. So with the warmer days coming up, I expect planting progress to really get going. But let's talk about summer. Several of the long-range models that our U.S. government runs, there's actually 9 separate models that they run. All of them, with the new data that came in at the beginning of May, have actually backed off on the really, really warm summer that many of them have been predicting. They are actually coming much more into alignment with the forecasting system we use at Agripol. What that says is, hey, this summer could have near average temperatures, maybe a slight warm bias. And right now, our model's not picking up on major precipitation stresses, and only one of those 9 models is picking up on some drier weather in the central state. So this is actually looking to be a pretty good summer currently. Now, it's hard to forecast out that long, but that's what we're watching. I'm going to throw in a wild card, though, okay? Right now, over the Gulf of Alaska, so this is off the west coast of the United States, we have had very, very cool sea surface temperatures. It's dominated the flow of the jet stream all winter. It's what erased the drought in California. It's what erased the drought in the central states. So it's been a major factor. Now, in summer, sometimes those cooler waters can help force a ridge in the central plains. And why I get concerned about that is that some of our hottest years that we've kind of had on record have also had that feature. Now, if it was as simple as looking at the temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska and predicting our summer weather, my job would be very, very easy. It's only one thing I'm watching, but I want everyone to let me watch it, keep a close eye on it, and I'll give you updates about the position of that cooler pool of water and what it's going to be doing in our jet stream throughout the month of May and June. By June 15th, we'll make a good call on what we expect those early July temperatures to look like, because you know, when it comes to corn, it's all about what the first 2 or 3 weeks of July will look like in terms of temperature and precipitation. You could have a near average summer with a heat spell right there and a little short drought, and that can really knock the top off the yields. So all of that we'll be watching and updating every Friday.
We'll be counting on you and looking forward to talking with you again next Friday, Eric.
Yep, sounds good. Thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agribol, joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.